Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there, Second City Hockey listeners, it's Dave Melton here, and before we get to the show, I wanted to let you in on a little secret. All of those ads you just heard, if you want to listen to the show without them, visit SecondCityHockey.com and sign up for either one of our subscription tiers, where the perks include ad-free versions of the Musings on Madison podcast.
And with the first overall selection in the 2023 NHL Draft, the Chicago Blackhawks are very proud to select from the Regina Pats, the Western Hockey League, Connor Bedard.
That's going wild. Good. Hey, boy. Come on. Hey, you want to play some hockey?
Kelly Oshiel, Toronto.
That's fit.
Score Chicago.
Oh, my God.
Welcome in to another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, the site manager at Second City Hockey. You can find me on Twitter at DMelt57. And as you may be fully aware at this point in the season, just want to let you remind everyone, if you the biggest way you can support our website right now, if you listen to this podcast, wherever it is you're listening to it, leave a 5-star review. If you leave 4 stars or fewer, we're going to assume you're a Blues fan. SecondCityHockey.com is where you can find all of our content, game previews, recaps, and we'll have some more analysis coming up with some big breaks between games on the way. And that is part of the exclusive content you can get with a subscription to Second City Hockey. $5 or $10 a month, depending on the tier you want. Either way supports us. There's also merch there if you'd like to support us that way. All of it would go, any support we can get is much appreciated. And thank you again to everyone who's kept us going and is literally the reason why we are still here to this day. And hopefully for many years to come. As for this episode, we're shorthanded once again, slightly different trio formation. Up first with us this evening, he is to Second City Hockey what Lucas Woodward is to holding absence. He's on Twitter at Mill182. It's Mill Savage.
That's a good one, actually. That's and a deep, not deep cut, but
Lucas Woodland. I said not Woodward, but yes, Lucas Woodland holding absence. There you go.
Yeah, that's a good band. My brother likes them. You know, not much to write about tonight. The Bulls got beat by like 20 in their home opener in very Jerry Reinsdorf fashion. But at least the Astros aren't in the World Series.
we've got that going for us, which is nice. That's about, yeah, I think everything I've read and heard about the Bulls, which I'll admit isn't much, but it seems the general idea is this is the last dance for the Levine, DeRozan, and Vooch trio, and it's probably not going to end well like all the other seasons haven't ended well.
Spoiler alert, unfortunately, they stink.
They're going to be, it seems like they're like just good enough to get into the play-in, like around the 8-9 seed, and they probably will lose that game like they did last season, and there you go.
Yeah, it's two Thursday night football for me.
Yeah, exactly. Also with us this evening, the official Second City Hockey Pizza correspondent, Eric Eggenheimer.
Nice to be here with you, Mill. And Dave, Mr. Power Play, will be 22% Melton.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You know, I put it in the Slack that I have already filled with so much regret that I said that into a public forum where people can throw that back at me.
I said Lucas Reichel would have 55 to 60 points. So that we're all wrong about some things, one way or another.
I think we should like put a flag in this date and see which one of those gets closer to being less wrong at this point.
Because for what it's worth, everything we say on this site is on the internet forever. I found some Edmonton site using one of my articles about Duncan Keith as source. So we might as well just, you know, live and die by it.
See, that's why, like, I hate doing predictions of any kind, and I broke my own rule by saying something like that, which is kind of a prediction, and this is what I get. Lesson learned. I will never make another prediction again.
Good thing hockey is non-canon.
How dare you believe in anything, Dave?
Yeah.
How dare you?
Well, if anything has taught me not to believe in anything, it is Chicago sports.
Very true.
So that could just be the end of the show forever.
Yeah. Yeah. Good night, everybody. No, this team that there was like a brief 5-year stretch where I actually, they cured me of that ill, and it has since returned. So I'm totally back to the defeatist attitude when it comes to all these teams, as I put together in a chart a week ago in that article that they are, this is, this century, it's literally the worst stretch for the 2022-23 season was the worst Chicago sports season they've had this century. And it's only trending down. So,
well, I mean, your boy Tyson Blagent, he might be the real deal.
I swear to God. If I
Blagent Blast.
I don't want to, like, it's a nice story. I'm happy. I'm really happy for him. But no, just no.
What if he ended up being like the greatest Chicago Bears quarterback of all time? Hey, some like
that is damning with faint praise, but also I'd have more faith in the Blackhawks power play getting up to 22%. That's
I know I absolutely do not believe it's going to happen, but I mean, for every top flight prospects, or, you know, they really never traded for anybody that big besides Cutler. But anytime they thought that they've solved it, they just never have. It would be hilarious if it was like the ultimate, just
the Division II quarterback, the first quarterback from the state of West Virginia to play in the NFL. Just all these. Yeah, that would, yeah. It would be hilarious. I don't discount. I always appreciate good sports comedy. So maybe that would be cool, but I'm not holding my breath for that one.
Nor should you be.
Touché.
Speaking of things that make me not want to hold my breath, watching the Chicago, never mind. That was a really bad segue, but I tried it and failed. Kind of like the Blackhawks have done the last three games, losing. They've lost three in a row. Dating back, yeah, they lost to Colorado, Vegas, and Boston since the last time we talked. And I think the last time we talked was after the Toronto game. And I remember, I think one of the last things Eric said was, you know, they go beat Colorado, come home from this opening incredibly difficult road trip with a 3-2 record. We'd all have been feeling pretty damn good about this team. Well, then Colorado beat the shit out of the Hawks, and then they lost to Vegas in a game that was a little bit closer, and then Boston kind of kicked their asses too. So now we're sitting here with a 2-5 record and a 3-game losing streak, and Connor Bedard can't score. Lucas Reichel doesn't have a point. Bedard has no help. Taylor Hall's injured again. It's all falling. The sky is falling. Everything's terrible, right, Eric?
Corey Perry is spreading the black plague.
Corey Perry has reminded us that he is 36 and can't skate anymore. Any other ones? There's a lot more things I'm missing.
They were shut out. They were shut out 2 of the 3 games.
Yes.
They've been outscored 12-3, and that third goal was that Corey Perry garbage goal at the end of the Vegas game. So really, they've been outscored 12-2. It's not the optimism that we had has been taken out behind the barn, and now it's buried in the backyard somewhere, I think it's suffice to say.
Yeah, and I think it is more, this is probably closer to what the rest of the season is going to be like. Hopefully they don't have to play Stanley Cup contending teams for two or three straight weeks later in the season, but this feels a little bit closer to the speed we're probably going to be at for most of the season, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, they finally get the Coyotes after the Knights. So that's a team that's more, you know, talent-wise comparable to them, even though, you know, Arizona's still probably a little bit ahead of where they are right now. But then it's the Panthers, it's the Devils, it's the Lightning, it's the Panthers again. So, I mean, it's trial by fire right now. Like, they're in it. And I'm looking at the schedule right now. I'm looking for a stretch where, and it's,
you should probably go to December, because I don't think,
yeah, like, basically,
there's, later in November gets a little bit nicer. Just in December, it's a very home heavy schedule in December. So hopefully some home cooking allows for some more, less soul crushing defeats, I guess.
End of November, it's Blues, Kraken, Red Wings, Jets. Like that's the first time where it feels like they're not playing, you know, somebody who could theoretically be in the finals or win the cup, you know, for them, or they do a little bit of a trade off every once in a while. Like they have the Predators and then they have, you know, a much stronger team, the Sabres, they have the Blue Jackets, then they see the Leafs next. So that's the first time. That's the first pocket where I'm seeing it's like four teams that might not be in the playoffs, you know, that are still statistically, you know, and probably positionally a little bit better than the Hawks are right now. But that's, so, I mean, that's, you're 6 weeks into the season at that point.
Yeah. So, buckle up, folks. I guess that's all I got for you. It's going to be tough. What about you, Mill? Any thoughts on the first, the last week, I should say?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's not a lot of gray area. They have zero overtime losses. Like they're not getting games, like they're getting crunched when they lose. I think that in the back end of the season, if they do improve like they should, you might see a little bit more of at least splitting a point in some of these games. But it's clear right off the bat that they're nowhere near these top teams in the league. Like it's, I mean, a joke to think about that. I just think you want to see them compete a little bit in more close games, but you know, it's early.
Yeah. Like I don't think when they get blitzed by teams like Colorado and Boston, that's like, it sucks. You don't enjoy it. And hopefully, mm-hmm. you know, it's the worst thing to have all those games this early in the schedule, because like there's a lot of new faces on the roster. There's been no chemistry built, and you're facing these Colorado and Boston teams that have had lines together for several years because they've been good for a while. Same thing with Vegas too. So, you can throw Toronto in that mix as well, although the Hawks beat them. So it's the schedules did them no favors. And I think you'd like to see them be a little bit more competitive, but it's also kind of the reality of the situation. Like it sucks to watch. It's not enjoyable. And like, I think after last season, we were all hoping for more consistently watchable games at a minimum. And it just sucks that we're not even getting that right now.
Well, and you brought up a good point. These guys mostly have not played together, and that makes it a lot harder, especially when they're not like upper echelon talent.
Yeah, well, and then like the entire preseason and training camp, it was all about Taylor Hall's going to be the guy that can skate with Bedard and give him someone who can match his hockey IQ and his hockey skill. And a few games into the season, he gets hurt, and then he comes back and he re-aggravates, and now he's out for a week-to-week thing. So there you go. The player they brought in to help Connor Bedard is already gone, and there's. Like, I guess this is where I want to focus on first, and Eric, I'll swing this over to you, because this has been a lot of the discussion in Second City Hockey headquarters about what they can do with Bedard to help him out. And like, I think there are some things they can do that Richardson has not done yet, but I also feel like I don't want to say rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, but it's like picking picking a different square peg that's not going to fit in this round hole.
I think first things first, you have to get Tyler Johnson off his line. There's that's not doing anything for anybody. It's not, I mean, Foligno, like you squint and you can see the logic, but in watching the game last night, Foligno is someone that Connor Bedard can't carry the puck in by himself every single time. There's going to have to be some dumps, and somebody's going to have to go get it. Foligno is somebody who can go get it. He can go into the corner. He can body somebody off the puck. He can get the puck and get it back to a playmaker. But I think that's what's missing, is there's no one to feed Bedard. There's no one to make a play and set him up for, because we've seen what happens when he gets a puck with space and it's him and the goalie, and he has one thing to do, and that's shoot the fucking puck as hard as he goddamn can. I mean, the goal obviously didn't count yesterday. That was another beautiful goal, and it was similar to his one from the other night, where it's him and the goalie, and he just beats him. He beats him over the glove or beats him to the post. So that's what's missing on this team, and that's what's missing on his line. So like, is that Lucas Reichel? Is that Phil Kuryshev? Like, hopefully Kuryshev sticks with him Friday night. And then maybe that's something we can see a little bit more. You know, Kuryshev looked, he looked shifty last night. He definitely has the ability to make some plays that other people on that team can't play. And that's what he needs. You know, we were talking about it a little bit right before we started recording, but he's an 18-year-old kid. Everyone's keying on him from the other team. You can't ask him to create opportunities for himself constantly. Like, he just cannot do that right now. And he's trying to, and he's getting frustrated because of it. There needs to be somebody else that can feed him, that can help him, that can make plays for him, so that it's not him trying to walk guys and figure out a way to get off a shot that's just not there right now. So I don't think Foligno, you know, that doesn't bother me so much. He's somebody that can go get the puck, so he doesn't have to carry it in all the time. It's they need some type of facilitator to put on that line, and it's definitely not Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, and I like the thought I've been wrestling with for the last few days is like this Luke Reichel discussion, which we're going to get into a little bit, about abandoning him at center. Like, it feels like it's premature to decide he, in this 7-game sample against, again, as we've already discussed, really, really good competition. I feel like it would be premature to decide already that he cannot be an NHL center. It feels like give him 20 games, give him till Christmas, Thanksgiving, Christmas-ish before you really get too far down that road. But it also is like, I don't know how else to get Connor Bedard going and get him some help without putting Bedard between Reichel and Kuryshev, because that's probably the three best offensive players you have right now, or the three most creative players, and let the three of them figure something out.
It's sports is always like the absolute narrative. If you're trying to like tread water and like get some scoring, who cares? Put him with them for right now and then put him back at center at the end of December, if you want to do that. You know, if you're trying to like get your offense going and get things clicking, like, why wouldn't you just kind of try whatever right now? So if you want to bump Reichel off and then bring him back, like, you absolutely can do that. There's nothing stopping you. So it's worth taking a look, I think, you know, at the very least.
I don't know, Mill, what do you think about that?
Well, I just want to say Tyler Johnson is so fucking Yaha these days. He reminds me of, like, every time he cuts through the neutral zone, it's like when Crisper Stieg went headfirst into the goalpost during the final in 15. He's like diving all over. I don't know. He can't elevate a guy like Bedard. I think it's hard to get a guy like him going because, and this is something we talked about before the season, he is not coming in like a Taves and a Kane together with some established guys, not just veterans, but some other talent around them. This is just like a misfit toys type of situation, and Hall being hurt does hurt them. I think Kuryshev coming back is probably a little bit of a help, but they have to find some kind of chemistry, if nothing else, just to get him going. And he's your best player, pretty much. You can't like have protected starts, you know what I mean? Like, with zone starts and things like that. Like, you have to play him.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know if there's a good answer. Like, the thing you said, Eric, about putting, temporarily moving Reichel to wing just to get Bedard going might be worth a look or two, especially with, I wanted to look and see if they have home games coming up soon, because I know the game, they are in Vegas on Friday and then they're at Arizona. So the thought was, like, if you have some games at home with the last change, load up that one line, use the last change to get them away from the top pairing of the other team and maybe get some success that way. In November, they do have, the first two games are at home. It's a Saturday, Sunday back-to-back, but it's against Florida and New Jersey, who are two of the best teams in the East. So I don't know how much help that's going to provide, but still, like, it's just, you know, it's 7 games into Bedard's career. I don't think any of us, I think if 7 games into his NHL career was going to ruin any sort of mentality about him, then he would not have been this heaven sent prospect that we've been talking about for 2 years. So I'm not worried about like the long-term ramifications of this little stretch. Like, you can see the frustration, and I didn't see it, but my Twitter timeline suggests that his second period interview or second intermission interview with Emily Kaplan, you could see how pissed off Bedard was during the interview. So the frustration, absolutely, is growing. And I think for him, it's probably just, you know, I don't know if they have game logs for the WHL, but he's got one goal in seven games. When do you think is the last time that happened to him?
Never.
He has two goals, Dave.
Two goals. Excuse me. Well, the point remains. When was the last time he only scored two goals in seven games?
He used to score two goals a period growing up.
Right? So it's just, this is, you know, this is probably his welcome to the NHL moment. And still, like, it's not like he isn't generating chances. Like, I was looking at the individual expected goals statistic over at Natural Stat Trick. It's not the best number in the world, but if you sort individually by forwards in the NHL, Bedard's still way up there in terms of the chances he's generating. Like, he's 15th in the NHL among all forwards who have skated at least 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really welcome to the NHL. It's welcome to this team.
There you go.
No, seriously. I mean, if he was on maybe 15 other teams, he wouldn't be having a lot of the problems he's having.
Yeah. And it just, it feels like and I think we talked about this a little bit last week. There's also an element of him. You probably have to score goals in a different way in the NHL than he did in the WHL. And it seemed like any time he released his shot in the WHL, it ended up in the net because it was so good and the goalies weren't as good. The goalies are better. The defensemen are better. So there's not as much room to work with. The goalie's a little better at stopping the shots, even when you're trying to pick corners. And it's all adding up. He doesn't have much help with line mates, yada, yada, yada. It's all adding up. And he's scuffling a little bit. Anybody worried about him long-term? I'm not.
No.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah.
No. And I wouldn't say it's even him scuffling so much as it's the team's scuffling and the team's inability to create scoring chances. Like, there was a couple more, I would say, in the first game. He hasn't had shots in the last couple games. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's not like he's having grade A opportunities and missing. Like, it's overall, it's team play. They're not able to do these things. And yes, that absolutely has to be frustrating to somebody who, you know, wants to come in and be the face of the franchise and like score and lead the team. The team's just not up to par right now. And, you know, I know for as much as he scored in Regina, like the Pats were not an especially good team either. And they made it into the playoffs because of him. He dragged them in on his back completely. Like, that's not going to happen here. And I'd like to think he's, you know, smart enough to realize that coming in, but nobody wants to get their ass kicked. Like, it doesn't matter what team you're on or, you know, how much you think you don't match up with maybe, you know, the top tiers in league. Like, they're pissed off and they should be, but they got to figure out some things. They got to fix some things. And there's, I think, a couple of bigger problems than maybe any of us foresaw or thought. And so that's the most important thing right now, but there's no reason to be worried about him at all. He's been everything we thought he was going to be so far. He just hasn't had many opportunities.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how he works his way out of it. Cause I'm sure he will at some point. I'm a little worried about when, because we talked about the schedule eases up for a night. And then when November gets here, there's another daunting slate of games coming. So, I guess we'll see.
I think too, when the team gets faster, maybe next year, they look like they drag a lot, you know, they still don't look fast. They don't look slow, but they don't look fast. And I think that this league has evolved so much. You saw it in the Colorado game that they're 2-1 and done. You know, they can't keep up with cycling. It's tough.
Yeah. I mean,
I think, expanding on that a little bit, I think so much of the way that they're playing right now is reactionary. That
right.
They're slow because they're watching and then they're chasing. They're not. And that's in the recap last night, that's what made Foligno stand out to me, is he seems to be one of the few guys that's like, he knows what's happening.
And like get on your horse and go. Yeah.
Yeah. He's not waiting for somebody to make a play and then reacting to the way that the other team is coming at them. He's just taking the puck and he's going up the ice. And I think a lot of that is young kids in situations they're not used to and maybe being a little bit intimidated and also maybe like pressing a little bit. So you hope that once they get a couple goals and they get a couple wins, everyone will kind of loosen up a little bit. And that will start to go away. Otherwise, there's going to be a much bigger problem for the rest of the season.
No, I agree. And I think just to add one more thing, like in that regard, they should maybe be a little bit more aggressive and just try to attack the puck because, you know, they're not a great team. They can't just worry about trying to stop goals that they're not stopping anyways.
Absolutely. Like and it was two mental mistakes for the second and third goals last night. And they weren't the kids, you know, the kids didn't make those mistakes. Those were the vets.
Right.
I feel like on offense, especially watching it from the press box for the home opener the other night, nobody's shooting. They're trying to fucking pass the puck into the back of the net every single time. And it's not, you know, Bedard was doing it too. Him, Reichel, Korchinski, I think they mess around with each other after practice and they're trying to do all these like weird backhand feeds and cross ice passes and things that just the opposing team sniffs out immediately. And then it's going back the other direction. And that's kind of what Richardson was saying last night. Like they need to get harder. They need to get tougher. Like they need to get inside guys. They need to battle for pucks more and not just think that they're going to like outplay everybody with their skill because they're not right now. They don't have it in them.
Yeah. It's like, put your head down and run the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously, like we've all turned
meat
into
and
the
potatoes.
Yeah. I mean, we've turned into the 300 level goons yelling, shoot the puck, but they're right.
Yeah.
You have
to
score, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes I think it is, it just sounds like a lot of these star players from Bedard to Korchinski and Reichel and everyone else, it's just a very much a welcome to the NHL type of moment for them right now. And they are, when they figure it out, they'll be okay. And like I think the unfortunate side of it is that because of the current configuration of the roster, there really isn't a veteran that can pull them out of this slump. It's just got to be the kids got to figure it out somehow.
Well, and they all have to do it at once. That's, yeah. I think that's part of the issue too, is it's not like, you know, Reichel's established and he kind of went through a little bit last year and then it seemed like he found it at the end, but he's not, you know, he hasn't played an entire season yet. So they're all coming up. They're not only trying to do it individually, but then like as a team too, like that's not a very easy thing to do, especially when you don't have a lot of like balance or, you know, secondary scoring or however you want to classify it. And especially now with Hall out, like there's not really anybody else that they can lean on to make plays. It's kind of up to them.
It's yeah. So the one thing I'm curious about kind of in this discussion, because it does feel like the Hawks are a little bit the victim of the circumstance because, you know, it's still professional sports. Everyone has the equal opportunity to build a roster, but that is, just the way the roster is currently configured and this step of the rebuild, like that is, there's a lot of young players in big minutes and they are getting a little bit of a rude introduction to the NHL because of the schedule. But I guess the way I was trying to frame this whole discussion is going back to the Lucas Reichel talk, because he doesn't have a point. And he hasn't looked particularly good. There's been like a few flashes here and there. I feel like there's been a couple zone injuries I've seen out of him that looked really impressive and looked like the type of player you were expecting to get out of him this season. And that's where like I've seen several tweets and suggestions of maybe they don't need him at center anymore. And I just, you know, other than the discussion we had earlier about putting him on Bedard's wing to get that line going for a little bit, I don't know why everyone is making that judgment on this particular person and this particular position discussion when the whole team sucks. That's the part of this that I don't fully understand.
I mean, I think a lot of that has to do with people having expectations for young guys who are draft picks during these really bad years. I agree with what you're saying, Dave. That's kind of my consensus on other people. I don't know. I mean, it's going to take them time.
Yeah. And I don't want to, I'm not going to sit here and tell you Lucas Reichel has looked like the second line center of the future. I think there was one goal in particular and the game is escaping me. So it might have been during the Toronto game, and it might have been the only goal that they allowed, where Reichel pretty clearly lost his check in the defensive zone, and that player ended up scoring the goal. And the defensive side of things, I think, is the main concern with any young player trying to play center at the NHL level, is how well they play defense, not necessarily the offensive side. And seeing things like that, and I think I've noticed a few other instances where he's lost his check in the defensive zone. So it hasn't been a great look for sure, but I don't know. I'm very hesitant to make any proclamations about anything related to this team right now.
I think it's just frustration too. You know, he seemed like somebody that kind of turned a proverbial corner at the end of the year, and he had a nice streak where he was putting up some points. So I think, you know, whether it's fair or not, there was kind of an expectation that he would be like a little bit ahead of everyone else. And that's not the way it's looked, and that's not the results that have happened so far. So I think just anytime your team is getting beat, and they're getting beat pretty soundly, like, you want to get frustrated, it has to go somewhere. And so the fact that he's kind of scuffled and he hasn't looked really strong, like, it's easy to point at him and be like, you know, he's a weakness right now. It's seven games, but right. Yeah.
And if they play 50 or 60 and he's left in the dust while other guys are making strides, you can have that talk. But they all stink. And like you said, Eric, it's seven games. It's not like they've played a whole season together or half a season.
Well, no, and they're changing the line mates, you know, like every other game. And that was the thing, is he was supposed to get a look with Athanasiou and Kurashev. And then Kurashev got hurt before the season. And then he's had all kinds of different line mates, and he's been, you know, bumped all over. And so I think, I don't know. I mean, we can't tell the coaching staff what to do, but, and they're in a position where with Hall being out, they already have to kind of mix things up a little bit. So it's not like you can just say, you know, put guys with each other for 10 games or whatever and let them see like if they have chemistry, because the way that the roster is performing and with the things happening, like they aren't afforded that luxury right now. Like you just have to get out there and try to compete.
Yeah. Also, on the small sample size, how many games did they start out on the road? Five?
Yeah, the first five.
So think about this. You have this team with no chemistry, a bunch of young guys, and they don't have last change for the first five games. Like they can't even get a matchup.
Yeah.
Well, and you're playing coaches who, for the most part, know to take advantage of that, know that you're young. They know all those things as well. So, yeah, you're going to get stuck in some situations, you know, off of icings or whatever, where you're just going to get killed by the matchup because the coach knows what they're doing and there's nothing you can do about it.
Right. I agree. I mean, it's tough. It's a tough stretch to start the year. I think, Dave, when you said earlier about the schedule, I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. You have to play all the games, but that's a rough stretch.
Yeah. And I'm curious, the other part of this equation is also like, relatively speaking, Luke Richardson's a fairly young coach. Like this is only his second season behind the bench. So he's not even at 100 games in his career as a head coach. So there might be a learning curve for him as well. So,
as is the GM.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean the whole thing's a process. I think after the game, the defeat to Boston on Tuesday night, and I think it was partially because they got the goal from Bedard in the power play, and it felt like maybe they were going to start doing something, and then it got overturned. The life kind of sucked out of the building, and then Boston scored those two goals in a minute, and then that was it. And I think there was just a little bit of I think you could feel some frustration mounting after that game. And I think it carried over in some of the conversation you saw afterwards. But I think it's just like, hopefully, I think everyone today, we're recording this Wednesday night. Hopefully everyone took a deep breath and like, it's going to be okay. Like, it's just, this is the way things are right now. Like, it sucks. It's not fun. But hopefully there's more enjoyable games later in the season. So, and it's going back to your point, Eric or Mill, I forget which one you said it about. The matchup situation against Vegas last, that would have been Saturday night. Bedard's had the top two opponents he faced at 5-on-5 was Braden McNabb and Shea Theodore. So that's Vegas's top pair, right? I would assume.
Yeah.
So
I believe so.
So yeah. So,
Bedard, McNabb's not that great though.
Yeah. No, but Petrangelo's out right now. So
yeah, that's why.
Yeah. And then against when they were playing against the Bruins the other night. I believe it was Carlo and McAvoy was the duo that he faced the most that night. And that was probably, I mean,
McAvoy's tough.
Yeah, Carlo McAvoy. So that's probably Boston's top pair as well. So maybe, you know, there's only like, I don't know. I didn't notice that like Boston was winning a draw and switching if Bedard was out there, like the Hawks used to do with Kruger back in the day. But it seems like a more consistent effort to get Bedard away from the top D pairing of the other teams, because, you know, I assume anytime there's a defensive zone draw, they want Bedard, the Hawks want Bedard out there, but the opponents are going to throw, even if they have, the Hawks have the benefit of the last change, the visiting team is going to throw their top D pair out for a D zone draw. So what do you do?
Well, yeah. And we also watched the Hawks for 10 years with a coach who stood out there with a blender. So, I mean, like, you know, we're kind of probably all in the mindset of like, that's the way to do it, which I do think it is. But like you said, Dave, this coach is young. He's probably still figuring out how to do that at the NHL level, because it's a lot different when you're playing these kind of opponents and the work that goes into studying them.
Yeah. There's two other points I wanted to hit on really quick. First off, Luke Richardson, after the game on Tuesday night against Boston, was very upset to the media and talking about wanting players to work harder. And he just was not happy with the effort and the way things have been going. And like he said, like we had our tanking season. We're not tanking anymore. So we need to be better. And even if that is ultimately going to be an unsuccessful philosophy, I like that it's in place, because that is indicative of a coach who will not, who's going to push his players forward no matter what. And I like the idea that he is already establishing that, I don't want to say culture, but he's establishing that bar of like, we are going forward now. And if you're not going forward with us, we will get someone else who will. And I like that mentality. I like that approach. I don't know if it's going to mean anything, but it sounded nice to my ears when he said it to the media. That's something I liked. The other point is there's two guys who are playing very, very well right now. And I feel like we should not let them get lost in all of these defeats that are piling up. And that is Peter Mrazek and Arvid Soderblom, who are both playing very well early on this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, Soderblom took a hit. His numbers took a hit, at least after that Vegas game the other night. Mm-hmm. And they got a couple of garbage goals too, after the Hawks looked like they were unplugged. But no, I mean, Mrazek's been, you know, in say that Colorado game, geez Louise. Like that could have been 7 or 8 to nothing easily. If he wasn't on it. So, you know, Soderblom obviously playing well means a lot more to the future of the organization, but it's nice to see Mrazek, you know, at least keeping them in games. And he is somebody that could be dealt at the deadline, you know, to a contending team, or even before then, if there's somebody who suffers some type of crazy injury. I'm looking at you, Carolina, with one of your 8 goalies that's injured every single year. But so, I mean, it's great to see. And then it's interesting, you brought up the Richardson thing, and that, I think that was the most interesting part to me, was that he said it publicly. And we don't know like what the goal of this season is outside of developing the players that we think are going to be here for the long term. So I feel like that was him kind of planting a flag a little bit and being like, this is not okay. Like, we don't want to come in and get our butts whooped every night and be like, well, you know, let's look to next year.
Oh, golly gee.
Yeah. What are you going to do? And I mean, the reality is they're going to be in there for a top 5 pick again, most likely. You know, barring some kind of crazy run at some point, they should be right there in the top 5. Like, they're going to have a lot more help next year, but you still have 75 more games to play in the meantime. And like Mill was saying, he's a younger coach. You know, this is only his second year being a head coach. He's got a lot of things to figure out. So I appreciate that he's taking it seriously, and he's not going to let him just kind of tiptoe through, especially as the year wears on. And, you know, some of these games, it becomes a bit more of a slog.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Mill. Sorry.
I just wanted to reiterate what Eric said. If you're a Hawks fan, you just pray Mrazek keeps it up, not just for the morality of the team or the morale of the team, rather. Jesus. But so not and both really. Yeah. But so you can maybe get something nice at the deadline.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I think there's a few other league-wide topics we wanted to get to really quickly before we get out of here. But first, we want to take a quick timeout. So come on back on the other side of this break, and we'll dive into those things.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison. And as promised before the break, had a few quick league-wide things we wanted to touch on really quickly. And one of them, mostly about... Well, it's a lot of stuff that happened Tuesday night. They did this Frozen Frenzy thing on ESPN. Buchagross and Weeks were in the studio. They did. They had all 32 games, or all 32 teams playing 16 games, and with 15-minute staggered starts. So there was hockey from, like, I think it started around 5 o'clock Central all the way up till about midnight. And I thought it was a really cool idea. I really like the idea. I like that the NHL did something new. I mean, it's obviously a copycat of the NFL's Red Zone, but there's nothing wrong with that, to take a good idea that another league has and run with it yourself. My only mild critiques is that I felt like I had the Hawks game on the primary TV and watched a little bit of the Frozen Frenzy before, a little bit during, and then after the Hawks game. And just, it seemed like they were trying to, there was too much airtime for Weeks and Buchagross. I think PK Subban was in there a little bit too. They did this weird chicken parm thing because they always have to do that with Buchagross. And I feel like if they would just cut back on that and let the hockey be the star of the show, I think like they could do something with that and revisit it several times during this course of the season. I don't think they could do it like every Saturday, but there's something there. It feels like, I don't know. Did Eric or Mill, do either one of you have any thoughts on that?
Go ahead, Mel. You start.
Oh, no, you can go ahead. It's good.
I thought it was a fantastic idea, even if it's kind of piggybacking off the Red Zone stuff. But in true NHL fashion, they have a great idea, but it's like half an idea, and then they don't follow it up. And there was I saw earlier today, I had to take a screenshot. There was a fantastic Michael Blake McCurdy tweet, who he has one of my all-time favorite hockey tweets too. But he said, league putting up a 32-team extravaganza last night, and if you enjoyed it and you feel like, yeah, this hockey stuff is really good, tonight you get to watch the Caps game. And so it's if it's about building fans and getting new fans, like, have a little bit more foresight and think about the next step beyond just getting those people to pay attention, because that's always been the thing. Like, people who love hockey, we know how awesome it is to watch. And it's always, you kind of scratch your head, like, why does this not translate? And it seems like, you know, there was was it Tony X was the guy for the Blues a couple years ago. Yeah. And it seems like every once in a while, there's a story like that where somebody's kind of like, holy shit, this is what hockey is. Like, how come I never knew how awesome it was? And it's, well, yeah, it's because of the NHL. It's because of the league. Because
the league signed with Versus back in the day instead of ESPN 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm a big Red Zone guy personally.
Yeah, same here.
So, yeah, so I think if they maybe figured out a way, I don't think you necessarily need every team to play because it's a lot. Oh, yeah,
for sure.
But I think if you figured out a way to do that, like once a week or something, where it's a certain amount of games and they're putting it on TV where people are seeing the highlights, it's going to draw more people to the league, because I have a ton of friends who – or like, you know, they're big football, big basketball guys, and they don't really get baseball, soccer, hockey. And then they'll see a highlight I share or something, and they're like, oh, that's really cool. So it's going to get more people to play fantasy or to gamble or just to become fans. All that stuff goes into Red Zone, obviously. And I think that's good for the league.
Yeah. I mean, anything like it's like from a marketing perspective, like I try not to get too into like the marketing side of things, because I'm not really too worried about like the growth of the game does not feel as important to me, because I'm going to watch no matter what. But the growth of the game does help drive up revenues, which drives up the salary cap. So that's good for the long term health of the league. I get that sports is business now. So whatever. So from like that perspective, anything that gets the game into more people's eyeballs is a good thing. And I think, you know, if you're watching the Red Zone, you're not watching the every single drive down the field. You're not watching a 13-play, 80-yard drive. You're just seeing the last three or four plays when they're in the Red Zone. So effectively, you're seeing just the highlights, and you'll see all the turnovers and big hits and things like that. And you can do that with a hockey game. You know, show them the big saves, show them the big hits, show them the fights, show them the goals. And if you do that enough, I think you can hook people into – you can hook other sports fans into becoming hockey fans who may not be there right now.
And they could totally do the cutaway when someone like just scored, be like, someone's on the power play. You know what I mean? Do all that kind of Red Zone stuff. We're all into it. The marketing thing's just weird, because you could put like LeBron or you know, Patrick Mahomes or any of those guys on a commercial and people know who they are. And then Sidney Crosby, who's been in the league forever, people are like, who's that?
Well, yeah, outside of Canada. Yeah.
Right, that's what I'm saying. And I'm just like, Sidney Crosby, because, you know, obviously guys from that era, him and Ovechkin really are the two. It's like people don't know who they are. It's like, that's crazy.
Yeah, like I'm sure more people in the United States know who Victor Wembanyama is than Connor Bedard.
Yeah.
Dude, the amount of people in Chicago who don't know, like, and that's every other fan base wants to talk about how sick they are of the league already, like trying to shove him down people's throats. But it seems like he has a pretty decent personality. Like, you know, he's going to give you more than boilerplate stuff, especially as he gets older. Like, that's a huge thing. And that's going to be a huge thing to like the next generation of hockey fans that are coming up, because I mean, there's so much interest drawn because of him. And I got to see an away game with him already. And like, that's what everyone around me was talking about the entire game, was him. So, you know, lean into that stuff. Absolutely. Like, don't let them just be hockey robots. Like, I don't know if that you're ever going to get anything worthwhile out of McDavid at this point. I think that ship has sailed, and he's just, you know,
hopefully he'll get the Ray Bourque treatment
in Chicago.
Well, right. Even just, I'm talking more from a marketing perspective. He's like,
oh, right, know, right.
He's chicken broth. Like, he's got, there's nothing there. There's nothing to say. So do what you got to do. But this is a really cool thing that they've done. So hopefully they're able to do more and kind of build on it. And, you know, they did the NFL did the Toy Story game, and the NHL did one with Big City Greens, which is a show that my kids love, a Disney show. It's actually really funny. You know, do some more stuff like that. Even if you're just copying the NFL's homework the entire time, who cares?
Yeah, you know,
it's all ESPN now.
They're by far the number one sport in this country, so there's worse things to copy off of.
And I do want to say, too, it's good to get the stuff for kids, because I know that a lot of our country doesn't have the regional aspect of, like, winter and that kind of thing, like how the North and Canada does. But Austin Matthews is from Arizona, so that tells you what you need to know.
Well, my best friend I lived in Los Angeles for a couple of years. One of my best friends is in Los Angeles right now this week, and he's gone to, like, three games. And, like, what he's paying is hilarious, like – there, and I was there when the Kings won both cups, and it's just nothing. Like, unless you're already a hockey person, it's crazy how much it doesn't translate to some of the warmer markets. So you absolutely have to take advantage any way you can to try to make inroads in those markets and like get people involved and get them excited about the sport.
It's funny you say that. I was out there like right after they won on a trip. I was there on a trip in 2010 or 12 rather. Sorry, 12. And 10 was Hawks, obviously. And it was hard to even see any Kings gear out there.
Yeah, I mean, it was rare. The couple games that I went to when I was there, and granted, it was two Rangers games and an Islanders game, so it's New York. New York's always going to travel well, especially out there where it's all show business crap. But it was dominated New York fans, you know, all over the Staples. And you could tell, like, the Kings diehards, they're there. And, you know, they love the team as much as all of us love our teams. But there's just not – it's like, weird – It's almost like a weird Cubs White Sox thing too, like with the Ducks, and like so many rich people like rep the Ducks but have no idea what's actually going on. So there's just not like it's bizarre. But anything that they can do, especially now, you know, you have some really good young players on Anaheim. LA should be good for a while. You know, the market doesn't matter so much anymore as far as the team goes. It's building the fan base up around it. So whatever they can do to get that going is.
And LA is such a transplant city too. I mean, like, the Rams game was all Steeler fans last week. So it's like, you know, they just, it is what it is out there.
That's my part of my theory behind why Los Angeles is so dirty, is because nobody actually is from there, so there's no civic pride. But anyways, we don't need to talk about that right now.
Well, I don't know. I was going to make some tie-in about just marketing the game in general, and this is related to the other topic we wanted to get to on a more league-wide thing, is the discussion that I believe there was Elliot Friedman reports today that there is progress being made on the possibility of decentralizing the NHL draft, which was kind of a unique thing that the NHL does, and that they bring all their teams into one place, when I think pretty much every other sport, it is, they might bring the prospects to it, like at the NFL draft, but the teams themselves are all at their home bases, calling it and faxing in their drafts, or sending in their picks, or what have you. And it was kind of a unique, different thing that the NHL does, to have everybody down on the floor like that. And apparently there's discussion and efforts being made to change that. And Eric, you were the one to mention this. I wanted to swing this over to you and get your initial thoughts on it. Then I'm sure Mill and I will hop in afterwards.
Well, it's kind of the same thing we were just talking about, where it's like about the foresight. I think the thing was that GMs and you know, the teams in general, they don't like the fact that the draft is so close to the opening of free agency. And so you have to bring your whole staff down there to, or wherever the draft is, you have to bring everyone there, spend days prepping for the draft. Then you have to figure out getting back home, and you have such little time to turn around before free agency begins. So that, rather than let's figure out a way to make some more time in between or do something creative, they're just like, oh, we'll just decentralize the draft, and then nobody has to go anywhere. But that was a cool thing that they did that was unique. Now, I don't know how much it impacts deals, having everybody be in one place together all that much, but it definitely can't hurt. And I know that, you know, somebody did a piece at some point about how much, like, the baseball, the winter meetings, how many deals are, that's like the springboard for deals that you don't see happen until 6-8 weeks later. So there has to be at least some similar run with things that are going on, you know, when everyone's put together for the draft. So I didn't go to the one in Chicago a couple of years ago. I know somebody who did, and they said it was really cool and it was a lot of fun. So it just feels like they're losing something that makes it a little bit more special, having everybody be put together. And if it's just for like logistic purposes, that just feels like it's kind of a miss.
Yeah. I actually went to that one.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, it was really fun. They had a lot of fan fest stuff. There was fans from every single team. They had, like, they debuted the Adidas stuff. That's when they signed that year. So they had every jersey, every draft hat. And for me, I walked into the UC, and with my own eyes, in one room, there's Mario Lemieux and there's Joe Sakic and Steve Yzerman. And I'm like, what the hell is going, you know, it was crazy as a hockey fan.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Henry Okiharju, by the way.
He's went to Buffalo, which is about the same thing. So
he's in a better place, literally, right now.
But yeah, like, I would like to know why. I don't know if there's been I would like an official NHL statement on why. Like, I don't think if logistics is the issue, well, too fucking bad. It's pro sports. This isn't going to be easy. You're getting paid a lot of money to make logistics work. You know, so what? Like, if someone could give me a better reason than just, ooh, it's difficult, I'll listen. But, you know.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing on the business end and then on the fan end. I just, from a fan's perspective, I think it's something every hockey fan should do once. I thought it was really cool.
Not only that, nobody's going to accidentally interview Kyle Davidson in his own living room. Like,
right? No.
Come on now. Come yeah. on now.
Maybe leave it up to Second City Hockey.
Yeah,
well, that's on the paid tier. Only.
I don't think he's inviting us to his house. I think is the issue there.
Not yet.
No.
Well, he's much closer to us in age than any of us want to admit, because he's an NHL GM. But yeah, it is a neat little thing the NHL does, and you know, I can't think of anything other than if logistics is the only excuse, that feels like a lame excuse. Or if they're just trying to save a few bucks by not having to fly people to wherever the draft is.
There's a few things the NHL does really well that they've done better than everybody else. They messed up the skills competition so bad last year. And then now it feels like this is another thing where they're different, they're unique, they're special in this way. And yeah, just to do it because then like Lou Lamoriello doesn't have to travel. So, like, come on, you know, give me a break.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Like, who fucking cares? He's exactly. No fun anyways.
Yeah. Sorry. You have to take an extra first class flight somewhere and be put up in a $1,700 a night suite
for free.
Yeah, exactly. Like, get out of here, dude.
I'm going to be the guy next time I go to a draft where I'm hanging a banner over the edge that says end the shootout.
Well, that's why they don't want it, Mel. They want to keep you out. They want to keep your protests away from
it. They keep playing like this, they'll have no problem with that.
That's what I was going to say. You may get your wish this season. There may be no shootouts that you have to pay attention to.
We might win in a shootout with the goaltending.
I don't know how Mrazek and Soderblom do in shootouts. They're doing pretty well everywhere else, though. So
hopefully the next goalie doesn't trip Bedard. Like, Fleury did in the preseason.
Can't be worse than when we had Robin Leonard in the shootout. And he, like, won one, and they had, like, a huge celebration. It was, like, against Columbus. Brutal.
I still remember that Columbus shootout that went, like, 17 rounds. That I think there was Seabrook who finally scored to end
there's
it.
There's also just a Dallas that one, too.
That went on forever?
Yeah, I think it was like 10 years ago.
Those ones are the worst.
Anytime you get through all the defensemen, it's a bad one.
Well, go ahead, Eric.
No, I was just going to say, wasn't it some like number six defenseman who did on the Rangers? And this was like, I don't know, 15 years ago, who did some crazy between the legs move. And then
Mark Malik.
Was that what it was?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I believe he didn't have a goal that whole season, but he walked in the shootout and pulled that shit off.
He's waiting his whole life to do that.
Well, I feel like, much like an NHL game, if we've gotten to shootouts, we probably need to wrap this up. So we were going to get into a food take. You know what? I've got a very simple one, and it might be something we've discussed before, and this is prompted by the food I had this evening that I really feel like Burger King gets a bad rap, and I'm not going to tell you they make the best burgers in the world, but if you're in a pinch and you just need something quick, I don't think Burger King is that I think it gets unjustly ridiculed when I think their burgers are actually pretty good. Fries are all right. Nuggets are kind of trash, but those burgers, they're not too bad.
Yeah, I mean, I'll eat Burger King. Like, I have no problem with it.
You can slightly taste the flame broil. Yeah, whether it's a chemical that they spray on or what, it doesn't matter. You can slightly taste it, I would say.
It does, yeah. I get a Whopper with cheese, some fries, and like a drink, and you're good. It's not like an all the time thing. I feel like we don't have any hot takes for this.
No, is this just a statement that Burger King is okay?
That I think, that's as far as I'm willing to go. That I feel like there is.
All right,
like
let's take it a little step further here, a little bit. All right, so if you're saying you think Burger King is a little underrated as a fast food chain, Mill, what is your fast food chain that you think is a little underrated?
That's a good question. To me, like, most of them are kind of in the same category. Like, it's fast food. I'm not a super picky person. Although I'll tell you what, I haven't had Arby's in a really long time, and I feel like that's something I don't have a taste for.
Oh, see, that's mine exactly. I think, you know, and it's pretty divisive. People are either pro or very anti, it seems like, but
I'm not anti.
That's one of the few ones I will eat. Yeah.
Fair enough. I mean, I'll eat it. I'll get curly fries.
Their fries are fantastic.
Yeah. I think the thing with Burger King is, like, people always compare it to, like, McDonald's, and then McDonald's is everywhere. And people are like, well, if you eat Burger King, you're like a trash human being. It's like, no, like, it's fast food. It's fine. It's good. I don't know. I get what Dave was pointing at. Like, I see it online all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, well, I think it's because of their ads with all the Whopper, Whopper, Whopper shit. And I'm totally understanding if people think that those are annoying and obnoxious. I get it, but it's also gets stuck in your head, and it's probably really good marketing ultimately in the end of the day because you know that it exists. So
the problem is there's not Burger Kings everywhere.
That's the way they like it,
I guess. They're kind of spread out.
Did you see there was a thing, I think it was from earlier this summer, that someone was remodeling part of a mall somewhere, and they like tore this wall down, and there was this perfectly preserved 90s Burger King behind the wall that no one knew was there?
No way.
Yeah. So there was a bunch of pictures of it, and it's got like the weird teal purple, like, looks like every a Charlotte 90s. Hornets coat. Yeah.
Yeah. it looks like old school Taco Bell colors.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But yeah,
oh, it was that's just so awesome.
Preserved behind this wall. I'm trying to see if I can find the article.
They should rope that off and leave it. That's good stuff. I will say this. Maybe my opinion about fast food all being the same is because they all look the same now. The square box.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah, bring back the Wendy's. I don't know what the like the Wendy's. Well, bring back the yellow Wendy's first.
The yellow Wendy's was better.
Yeah.
Salad bar.
Yeah.
Salad bar.
Oh, man. We used to go and we'd get the salad bar and we'd just load up on pudding like when we were kids. That was our move.
Remember salad bars being a big thing back in the day?
Hell yeah.
Pizza Hut salad bar.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm almost alarmed at how we said that exactly in unison.
I can like smell the inside of the building.
Oh man.
Those red plastic cups that are see-through.
Man,
that's one of my all-time favorite Onion headlines is local bank totally used to be a Pizza Hut. Like you can just there was a moment in time
when you would go to Pizza Hut with the Book It coupon for a free and a personal pan pizza, the little kitty one, man, that you knew that was going to be a good night when you were a kid. You could not ruin my night.
Absolutely. No, and our local Pizza Hut growing up for some reason had a bunch of arcade games. So it was like, it was the coolest. It was the best.
What I remember about Pizza Hut is like, it was so dimly lit. You could go there in broad daylight and then it would just get really dark when you'd walk in. They'd have like the billiards, like pool table lighting. Like, what are we doing after hours here? Well, that surely went on a nostalgia rant.
Yeah.
So we started
by talking about Burger King's fine and ended up going down fast food nostalgia. There we go.
And I would put the Burger King song at the end of this episode, but they're not one of our advertisers. So sorry.
Yeah, no free ads, even though we've been talking about them for the last 10 minutes.
But bring back to Yellow Wendy's.
The Yellow Wendy's, that was some good merch. just in case anybody cares, the restaurant, the Burger King, the Hidden Burger King, I found it. It was Wilmington, Delaware, behind the Concord Mall.
I thought you were Googling that right now.
I thought you were going to say Wilmington, Illinois, and then we could all take an SCH field trip to it. But
I hope they are so stupid if they didn't immediately come in and be like, leave it exactly set up like it is. We'll just take it over and like redo it. I think like malls, that type of stuff, that 90s nostalgia stuff, like somebody,
shit.
Yeah. They're cashing in and it'll be coming back. But
this is it's really old school. The tile on the floor. There's a fake plant still there. That's awesome.
All right. I think if you're listening to this,
if you're still interested in this
article needs to be posted at it will be posted at secondcityhockey.com under the article where this story gets posted or where this podcast gets posted, just so you can see this for yourself. And maybe we'll tweet it out too. But yeah. That is, I hope there was coffee. I hope there were some leftover coffee beans in the coffee maker.
Looks like there's like a birthday crown.
Burger King does not use coffee beans, Dave.
Coffee grounds.
It's freeze dried grounds that are probably 12 years old. Soda machines. Yeah.
Let me see the expiration date. I don't believe it.
There's still a picture of a guy.
Yeah, there's a picture of a guy with a hard hat, so he's probably working there.
This is really good. Podcast, famously a visual medium.
He's like reaching into a bag, grabbing fries out.
Oh my gosh. Oh yeah, I saw the exact same picture now. No, man.
Wow. Okay, sorry. Sometimes I forget when people are trying to listen to this, but I'm amazed.
It's a good article. It's a good story. So,
we'll definitely share it. Share it for the class for sure.
There we go.
They got the lights to work.
Well, I think that's going to need to do it for this episode of Musings on Madison. Here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I would ask you for final thoughts, but I think the Burger King abandoned in the mall is a perfect place to wrap this all up. So thanks to Eric. Thanks to Mill for hanging out. Thanks to you for listening. As always, keep an eye on the website for plenty more stuff coming your way throughout hopefully there's more fun things to write about very soon. Maybe there's like a Bedard hat trick waiting for us or something. But keep an eye on the website for that, and keep an eye on these airwaves, because we'll be back next week with another episode, because there's a pretty hefty break coming up in the middle of next week, and hopefully there's some good things for us to talk about, and we will talk to you then.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.